HB323 Pelican, HB165 and 166 Elk, and HB316 Navigability. And we will open the public hearing on House Bill 323, an act relating to a grant of state land to the city of Pelican. And we have with us today the sponsor of the bill. Mr. Speaker, would you care to join us at the table, identify yourself, and tell us about Pelican?
Madam Chairman, you ready for a motion?
Senator?
You ready for a motion?
In other words... In other words, Mr. Speaker, you may be perhaps brief and respond to questions. I know.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Representative Ben Bruiser from District 3. And to more or less summarize what I'm attempting to do here is that, as you know, when the state government was taking land from the national government, the Congress Forest, the Chugiak Forest, they have roughly 400... Well, actually, it's 23 million acres, of which 400 million acres would be available to the state. And the state went through and selected lands around larger communities in the southeast, and they never did get to the smaller communities, and we had a cutoff date. The end result was that some communities didn't have any land selected by the state around their community until after the statutory entry period had passed. And Rango and Petersburg went to court to receive theirs. Boomerang gets grandfathered in, and last year we passed a bill to give 600 acres to Whittier. And Madam Chairman, with that, I'll just leave.
Fine, thank you very much. We've acted in the past on a similar situation in Whittier. The municipality or city of Anderson, I think, faces the same situation. Some of the smaller communities have had problems. Were there questions of the speaker? Apparently not. Thank you very much. Was there anyone else to be heard? If not, I would close the public hearing and I would entertain a motion. Senator Jarrell.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move and ask unanimous consent of the committee that we move out House Bill number 323 amended with individual recommendations.
Unanimous consent?
Yes.
Do I hear objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Note for the record that Senator Jarrell, Vic Fisher, Coghill, Lassen, and Sturgiewski are in hand. Would now open the public hearing on two bills, both related. House Bill 165, Transplanting of Elk to Southeast Alaska, and HB 166, Appropriation for the Transplanting of the Elk. And with that, Representative Taylor, you're here as...
I'd prefer and like to follow up if I could, Madam Chairman, to anyone else.
All right, fine. Thank you very much.
Back on those islands.
All right, we have on both bills, Ron Somerville here, Mr. Somerville.
Madam Chair, my name is Ron Somerville, representing this case the Territorial Sportsman. I just wanted to indicate that we're a Juneau-based group. I'm president of the Territorial Sportsman. Our board did vote in favor of supporting the concept of trying to come up with an elk transplant southeastern. Realizing that a lot of the sportsmen down here would like to see some sort of relief relative to the lack of deer in some areas. Around the Juneau area, it's not as bad as it is in the lower southeastern. A lot of the sportsmen, Ketchikan, Sitka, Petersburg, Rango, have supported the concept of an isolated transplant to one of the islands whereby they're not jeopardizing some of the bigger islands that have fairly good deer populations. We recognize that there will be competition with deer. I think that the Rambo of the island has been selected is a fairly good one from the standpoint that it would be fairly difficult for the elk to leave the island if it didn't go ahead with that. Now, there are a lot of problems. I recognize the department's drug its feet on the concept of an elk transplant, and it was conceivably possible. The easiest, of course, would be to try to talk Senator Zaroff's constituents to allow us to take a few off of the Fognak. That may not be possible, but that would be the easiest possibility of going ahead with the transplant from there. I just wanted to bring out and stress that a lot of the places in southeastern here have extremely low deer populations for a variety of reasons, bad winter conditions as well as heavy predation, human and otherwise, I guess, primarily the wolf predation in some of the islands. And we've had extremely low deer populations since the late 60s, early 70s, and I'd like to see some optional hunting opportunities, if you will. We're not proposing massive transplants to Southeastern to compete with our other populations. Some consideration along this line is certainly a reasonable one, and having transplanted in the past, we know that they will make it in some cases. If doubtful that they'll reach the population size that a Fognak has right now because it's more ideally suited to help, but I wanted to express the frustration of some of the supporters of Southeastern.
Very fine, thank you. Senator,
I'm just wondering, are wolves and elk compatible on the island?
Madam Chair, I think there's some debate on that, but certainly they would be less susceptible to predation than would be deer. I mean, more people to defend themselves and would appear to, but it depends on the weather conditions. We had hardback snow like we did in the central part of the state. It would be affected on any animal.
I'm not trying to complicate Representative Taylor's bill here, but I was questioning whether or not maybe a transplant to an island that does not have any wolves would be more appropriate for this type of a transplant rather than an island where there's a known population of wolves, where it might not work, and then consequently we might not get a transplant on any island. Later, I don't know.
Sure, I think that's one of the reasons that originally the proposal was for a fairly sizable transplant, obviously, in 50 animals, but since it's been reduced partly because of cost, I'm not familiar of any of the islands other than the ABCs down here that don't have some resident wolf population.
That's why I'm speaking of the ABCs, but that's the MR.
I think you find a lot of opposition, Madam Chair, from
CK.
I'm not sure that may have been in the year that they did put them down in Verbena. I think they were diverted to, the transplant was diverted to Verbena at the time, which is one was shot by the local farmer in the area. So elk as they walked into this yard.
Well, just one more question. Are they compatible with wolves? I guess that's the main issue. Will they be eaten up by the wolves, or will they be able to eat the wolves up?
My professional opinion, Madam Chair, is that it's, you know, all of the prey species we're talking about, whether it's moose, caribou, elk, or whatever, are prime targets of any wolf population. I think elk would be better able to survive heavy predation than would be deer, is what I'm saying. In this case, I don't think they'd be any more susceptible to wolf predation than would be with deer population. Certainly, if you had a reasonable size elk herd on the island, like on the Fognak, you have fairly heavy predation by bear on elk, but they're still able to make it and keep a fairly good reproductive rate. And they've been fairly stable, I think, Senator, haven't they, for the last at least 10 or 15 years. Fognak has fluctuated relatively little in its elk population.
Seems to be pretty fair.
Any other
Madam Chair.
Question? Senator.
Ron, the Department of Fish and Game suggests an amendment to provide for the transplanting to Zarembo Island or other appropriate location in southeastern Alaska. Do you see any problem with that language?
Madam Chair, no, we don't. We just agreed with the concept, locating whatever the best location. Zarembo, I think, was picked as an example by the sponsor of the legislation because it is a good example of an isolated island that was probably, you know, well located, centrally located, and somewhat compatible.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Somerville. Roland Shanks, you're here to represent the department?
I'll refer to Bob Hinman, who is our director of games.
Fine, thank you. Bob, welcome, and identify yourself, and we'll be interested in your comments on the elk.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Hinman, Deputy Director, Division of Game. It's a duteous honor to be deferred to in this case.
What's wrong with elk?
Madam Chair, there's certainly nothing wrong with elk. They're a fine species of big game. The department has been and is cautious about any transplants in the state. We don't want to get into the situation that some other states have been in, where the introduction of exotics has adversely impacted the native game you have. We certainly have a wider variety of wildlife species in Alaska than most other states. And there's very little logical reason that we should become the Hawaii of the mainland. And by that I refer to the fact that they have introduced, accidentally and on purpose, many, many species other than native ones to the detriment of other native species. We have advocated and conducted transplants in the state. Some of them you know, some of them have been successes, some have not. But before we do so, our clear policy is to ensure several facts first. One is that you have habitat for that species there. Secondly, is that the introduction of that species will not adversely impact the species that are already there, the indigenous species. Third, that it will serve a useful public purpose to do so. Fourth, I guess that it's feasible. We have been cautious, if not foot-dragging, as Mr. Somerville says, about elk transplant to Southeastern for several reasons. One is the past history of attempted transplants to Southeast. At least three times it's been tried, albeit, I will admit, not in any level that would ensure success. Secondly is the observation in the Pacific Northwest that when elk and deer cohabit an area, they do compete. And I caution that we don't take too much note of the fact that they coexist presently on Unit 8, the Kodiak Island group, without apparently too much competition. For one thing, that elk herd has been building up fairly rapidly in the last 10 years when it, from a decline that it formerly dropped to. And we've had a series of rather mild winters, so you haven't had the occasion for a very heavy competition between the two species. I don't think we really know for sure what will happen when we do get very heavy snowfall and intense competition between them. There's also the fact that we have pointed out that we do not transplant any animals anywhere unless we have the concurrence of the land managing agency. In this case, it would be the Forest Service. We are advised by the Forest Service biologists that it would be necessary, before any such transplant took place, before they could concur to it, that we would have to conduct a certain amount of feasibility field studies. And I believe in your packet you have a list which we jointly worked up with the Fish and Wildlife Service on criteria for a feasibility study. Some of that would require field work, some of it would be essentially office type work, but it nevertheless needs to be done. And to satisfy the Forest Service's needs for an environmental assessment, if not an environmental impact statement. We could not transplant without having that type of pre-transplant study conducted. We are not presently funded for any such study. Madam Chair, I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Bob, for your comments. Is the fact you mentioned an exotic, I guess I hadn't thought of elk that way, but I'm sure that's a term, but you've had elk populations in Southeast before, haven't you? I mean, is that such an unusual
thing? Madam Chair, elk have never existed
as a natural
species in Southeast, or in Alaska, period. They are exotic to the state, or is that to us?
Are there questions of the Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Lyson was bringing out a good point there on predators, and primarily the wolf. And Mr. Somerville had mentioned, of course, the the elk have been living in the same area there as the bear and have been able to survive quite well. Do the wolves hibernate like bears?
No, Chair, no, they don't. Obviously, the bear predation, when it occurs on big game, is generally largely confined to the time when the calves are very young, and obviously does not occur during the winter. On that point, I do think that that would have to be a part of your pre-transplant studies to determine the population of wolves on an island. And depending upon whether one transplanted adults or calves, I think it would be irresponsible to transplant without doing some type of predator control first to ensure some probability of survival of the animals that we transplant. I mentioned the possibility of either transplanting calves or adults, and if one transplanted from Kodiak, the Kodiak Island group, in all probability, you would be dealing with calves or yearlings, young animals, because of their ease of capture and transport compared to the old animals. Whereas if you were dealing with animals from Washington or Oregon, in all likelihood, you would be dealing with adult animals. So it makes a little difference where you get the animals from.
Okay. I guess the concern there that I've had from my constituency, of course, you know, we've had the mild winters and the elk population seems to become somewhat stable and maybe increasing, but we've also gone through periods of time where we've seen the harvest reduced because of the numbers that have gone down. And I guess I'm just a little bit hesitant right now because it wouldn't take too many bad winters back to back to create some problems for that particular herd. And I guess another concern is that some of the correspondence that I'm receiving is that the elk in the transplanting process would maybe receive the same amount of delicate handling as the caribou that were transplanted here a little while back, where there were a portion of those that didn't survive. And the numbers there that were needed to establish a herd would probably have to increase over that in order to create a base herd.
Madam Chair, I suspect we would not be depending upon military aircraft to conduct this particular operation.
Madam Chairman, I don't want to argue, but I think that the bill specifically says or there's somewhere I agree, okay, volunteers, organizations, and groups. That, to me, does not exclude the military.
Does not exclude it, no, sir.
And if you are not going to use volunteer help, that means you're going to have to pay for it, and the fiscal note doesn't allow for that. So I assume with the Coast Guard there and the National Guard that there would be some volunteers, if you will, utilized in this, which could result in the same type of consequences, I guess, as we had with the caribou herd.
Senator Coghill and then Senator Eliason.
Bob, is the foliage on these islands, are they more conducive to elk than they are to other species, what are we looking at? I mean, in the areas of a fog neck or down in the lower 48 where you're going to get the transplants from, is our habitat compatible to what we're trying to do?
Madam Chair, I think there is every reason to suspect that someplace in southeastern there is adequate habitat for elk. It's very similar to, we're talking about the black elk, which is a coastal species, and it exists in the states of Oregon and Washington in this rainforest type of terrain, and obviously on the Kodiak Island group as well. And while I couldn't be specific about Zaremba, for example, I'm sure that there is habitat type that would support elk someplace in southeast.
Senator Lassen?
Well, first, I'm recalling the opposition on the part of people in southeast Alaska. We transplanted deer to Kodiak Island. I think we're certainly willing to share our resource.
But it does bother me a little bit that you're saying, you're making such a big deal of this when we transplanted deer to Kodiak, we transplanted the elk there, we transplanted Mapa Buddha on Baranoff Island, and I don't know if that's been such a big deal. Well, I'd like to know the process that we've gone through in the past.
Madam Chair, at least in the last decade that I'm intimately aware of it, we have not done any transplants without doing the studies first to determine that there is the habitat there. In all those cases you mentioned, of course, we are dealing with animals that are native to the state and that were native to the area that was involved, although not a fair enough. I was limiting to the last decade or two because the elk transplant, what was that, from 27, something along like that, about a while ago. Obviously, even before my time. But, for example, the muskox transplants we've done have all been under that criteria. The recent caribou transplant on the Kenai, the elk transplant from the villa recently, as well as to Baranoff.
I want to be clever about this. It seems to me that in those days, people took the direct approach. They didn't have the habitat personnel available to maybe do the research and see whether it was compatible or not. But those particular transplants, like the elk, deer and the elk on Kodiak Island and the mountain goat on Baranoff Island, seem to be extremely successful. So I don't know. I don't know. See what the reluctance is of just putting up to 50 elk down southeast.
Further questions of Mr. Hinman? Yes, Senator?
I have a question. How many elk are we talking about? Unless I have a wrong version, I'm looking at sponsored substitute. Is that the one we're dealing with?
Yes.
That says of up to 50, but not less than 10 during 3 fiscal years. So we're talking of not 50, but between 30 and 150 elk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a question here. The Department of Fish and Game proposes to undertake a study that would last 2 years. The bill says that the department shall cooperate with the transplant, in effect, starting next fiscal year. So the bill does not provide for any study before you start transplanting. Bob, do you have any response to that, how that would be handled?
Madam Chair, I agree with you, Senator Fisher, that it does not seem to provide the means whereby we could do, as I said, I thought was necessary, and that the Forest Service tells me is necessary for studies pre-transplant. Presumably, if the law were passed, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what our responsibility would be.
Madam Chair, the report by the House Research Group indicates that Forest Service approval would be required. Is that correct, Bob?
That is absolutely correct, yes.
Well, would the Forest Service give any reason to believe that the Forest Service would proceed with approval lacking any research?
Madam Chair, all I can tell you, Senator, is that Forest Service officials with whom I worked on this agreed that this list of proposed criteria were those necessary to, as a prerequisite to their approval of a transplant.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I'm asking these questions mainly because I want to ask the author when he comes up what his response is. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. Other questions, Senator?
No, I'm just curious. You mentioned the fact that they have a problem with Hawaiian Islands. Maybe you could tell us what big game animals are causing that problem over there.
Madam Chair, people. More small game than big game.
Comparing apples and oranges.
But perhaps goats could qualify, Senator. They have a great problem with goats.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hinman. The only other individual, I believe, would be you, Representative Taylor, come and join us.
Thank you, Mary.
Now you have
Homo sapiens.
All the questions, and now we'll have all the answers.
Well, I doubt that I have. First, let me introduce myself. I'm Robin Taylor, representing District 1A, and I would apologize to the committee if I don't have answers. I can provide them to the committee. To try and take some of these matters in the last order in which they were received, Senator Fisher inquired concerning U.S. Forest Service permits. Mr. Jim Kaplan of the United States Forest Service has been working with us closely on this. This bill is supported by and large by the Forest Service, and in particular by their recreational people who are responsible for this particular area. They have previously met, as Mr. Hinman was kind enough to indicate, have gone over a listing of proposed criteria. It's not yet been established whether a full environmental impact statement will be necessary or merely an environmental assessment, which is primarily a paperwork process involving very little field work. I believe they will actually go with the latter and that they wish to see this project move forward. I cannot speak on their behalf. I hope to caution you on that. I'm only relating to you what I understand to be their position. The question also is one, and this matter has been addressed from the beginning by sportsmen's groups throughout Southeast Alaska, and not just hunters, by the way, either. There are many people within these sportsmen's organizations that would love to have photographic opportunities and believe that it also should be part of our ecosystem in Southeast Alaska, because they certainly are a beautiful species and one to have available just to look at, if nothing else. But it's unfortunate that the department has not found itself enthused about this project. If they had been enthused about it, it would have been done a long time ago. Instead, those transplants that we're discussing were done primarily during the federal days, before we became a state. Our state constitution requires that the department will enhance and assist in the preservation of the resident species of game in this state. You've heard a lot of discussion about exotics. The elk on a Frognack Island are not an exotic. As of statehood, they had been there close to 50 years. A lot longer than many people had been in the state at that point in time, and I would submit that they are a natural member of the fauna of Alaska, and that they deserve the same degree of enhancement effort as other species, including caribou transplants,
buffalo,
and buffalo, and others. And as concerns the efforts of military volunteers, which I completely sympathize with Senator Zaroff on that, and was just as frustrated and anguished as much as I believe others have, as concerns that mishandling. It's not our intention to utilize incompetent volunteers. The recent goat transplant that occurred off of the mainland and onto Revilla Island last year was primarily the effort of the Ketchikan Sportsman's Group, and it was all done through volunteer effort with very little involvement from the Department of Fish and Game. It is necessary, and I would emphasize this point, it is necessary to have the department involved, because you cannot purchase the necessary narcotic drugs so as to drug the animals, and you have to have the permit. And after you've got the permit and you have a few of them around to supervise, that's basically where their involvement is. You have to have a veterinary there to take care of the animals. That's why there is a very low fiscal note here. I do not intend to impact this department or have them handle it. In fact, I don't want them to handle it. A lot of discussion also occurred about failures in the past. Those failures that resulted in the past from elk transplants, because they were done by a group of total incompetence, in my opinion. They selected calf elk to begin with. They kept those elk in captivity. This is the most recent transplant, which again is pre-statehood. They selected those elk, kept them as calf in captivity for almost a year. Then they released those domesticated animals right in the backyard of a homesteader on Gravina Island, who on three different occasions took his time to go into town begging the department to please move the elk or come out and fence his property so they would not destroy the garden upon which he and his handicapped mother lived. When they refused to do that and instructed him to build his own fence to keep their elk out, he killed all the elk and told him to come get his elk out of get their elk out of his garden. And that ended that novel transplant. That's the type of effort that we've seen in the past. As concerns further studies, the studies that were parenthetically referenced to you by Mr. Hinman when he indicated that they were relying upon studies that indicated a competition between deer and elk in the Northwest, Those studies, I believe, come out of Wyoming. They involve mule deer or white-tailed deer, and if I'm incorrect on that, I'd ask you to correct me, Bob, but it's my understanding that that's the primary study you're relying on and not studies involving Sitka black-tailed deer and the Olympic elk we're discussing here.
Madam Chair, to clarify if he wishes.
And what?
That was primarily from Reed Brown, among others, of the Washington Game Department. So it was experiences with Olympic elk and black-tailed deer in Washington.
And where did that occur?
I don't know specifically. It was in Washington.
This is the fourth committee hearing that I've gone through on this question. It's the first time I've heard any indication of that, but obviously there may be some study on that. I have been in contact with the Washington Department of Fish and Game. They themselves are going to be moving an elk herd this year out of a down on the Columbia River near the mouth of the Columbia, where they're competing with a white-tailed species in that area, and they want to move some of those elk out of that area. They also have moved resident elk populations around their state and done a lot to enhance their elk population, while we've done nothing. As concerns, it's been indicated to you we should not rely upon the fact that deer and elk have lived together happily on a Fogmac Island. What else do we have to rely upon? We've had experience since 1927 with very small transplants on that island, I might add. Not as large as what I'm talking about here. Both species have developed and done well. In fact, the elk herd on a Fognac was at one time even larger, I believe, than it is today. It was killed back the result of a bad, bad winter situation. And in essence, what the department is telling us is they'd rather leave them there to starve during the winter than take a few out and get them propagating in an area where they stand a better chance of survival. That doesn't make good biological sense to me. It would seem that you would want to preserve and expand your game population so that in case of a disaster, you would have those other pockets to rely upon for rebuilding of your herd. The magazine that I've submitted to you, the article in that magazine, indicates, that, at least in that writer's opinion, that there may be a genetic pool deficiency within the Fogmac herd. He relates that to horn growth. I don't know that that's necessarily so. In fact, the elk we have in this state is something we're very proud of. They're the largest bodied elk in the world. They're much larger in size than most other elk populations, and I think that's, especially when we look to the question of subsistence, the number of people who do in southeast Alaska rely upon moose and deer at this time, they will then have this resource available to them. And believe me, one elk on the ground is worth a good five or six deer as far as something to feed your family on. In addition, I'd like to go through one other point that was mentioned, and that was whether or not the habitat could provide. The department has indicated in previous, and in some of the background material, that their studies now tell them that the habitat in southeast Alaska is sufficient to provide abundant food for the elk population for, quote, decades to come. Now, I don't know how many years we have to project into the future before we get to this doomsday situation that they're suggesting, that sooner or later the elk are going to compete with the deer and this is somehow going to hurt the deer. We selected Zirimbo Island because there has been no protection for the deer on that island, and the deer population has been decimated by predators to the place that it has probably, and I'm speaking now on behalf of a fish and game biologist retired by the name of Harry Merriam, who's done most of the Sitka blacktail studies up until the last 3 to 5 years. And he indicates to me that the Sitka blacktail populations in southeast Alaska, Zirimbo has the lowest population of any. And that's why we selected Zirimbo, so as to avoid the type of argument that you've heard here today about how there may be some competition. Before that elk population could get to the size that it would threaten the resident black-tailed deer population, we'd have to have a tremendous biological explosion of elk, all of whom stayed on that one island and never went anyplace else, weren't killed off by any predators, and then started nibbling on the same things that the deer are nibbling on. I can testify to you from my own personal experiences on a Fognac Island, elk on a Fognac eat and love to eat devil's club. Only animal I ever heard of or saw that would eat a devil's club, and they eat it. Eat all the tops right off of it. And if for no other reason, I think that's great if you're staring at the southeast Alaska. I've rambled on longer than I should have.
Senator Fisher.
I've read your bill several times, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what it requires of a department. It starts off, the department shall, and then it says cooperate with and assist, which means the department really isn't responsible for carrying out the transplant.
That's right.
So that if a transplant does not occur, because they're not satisfied with the arrangement, because the Forest Service doesn't give a permit, or somebody else says, you know, you can't do it, or whatever happens, the department would, under this, if we enact this, would not be held liable for non-performance.
I think the question would then turn, Senator, if I might, on what was the reason for non-performance? Was it in fact because we were unsuccessful in marshaling the necessary volunteers and capacity for transplant and so on in compliance with their regulations or their studies or whatever? Or whether in fact it was just stonewalling on the part of the department? So I think I would reserve that until I saw.
What if it, thank you, Madam Chair. What if the department said before we can fully cooperate with and assist, even though the deadlines are given, we have to carry out the studies that we told you in our report that we have to do to as professionals before we can participate in this. Would you go along with that?
If I might, Senator, I refer to various documents throughout this process that we've worked on for so long, and no one has yet told us that they're talking about a one-year study or a two-year study. In fact, the closest definition we've had to anything is that this type of study should be conducted over a period of years. Well, unless you're just going to go out and study the flora and fauna for years, I think you need to put an elk in the brush to find out whether or not he's living out there. And then you've actually got something to study. And as was suggested, and it's also in these materials, a transcript of the hearing held before Senate House Finance, the chairman there suggested they might want to take a look at the vast number of studies they've done in the past and run up to a duplicating machine instead of spending an additional $150,000 to go out and run a new study, this time under the name of ELF. I don't mean to be facetious by that, really, Senator, because I think it is an important question, but I think there's sufficient body of knowledge within the department at this time, especially as concerns the resident populations of deer and moose in southeast Alaska and goat that have all been studied, that they should be able to tell us as professionals whether or not the elk can live on that island and whether or not the elk stands a good chance of survival. In previous testimony from the department before the Resources Committee in House, the question was asked, is it at all possible that this transplant could result in any type of ecological disaster? Are these elk going to grow so big and so fast that they're going to chase everything else off the island? Are they going to do damage like the goat population is now doing in the national park, the Olympic National Park, where they're eating up all the little lichens and this is not good for the tourists or something? And the testimony was very definitive by the department. No, we cannot contemplate how this could ever result in an ecological disaster in southeast Alaska.
Madam Chair, 2 points. I'm glad you pointed this out. I kept looking because I'd seen 2 years somewhere. The minutes of the House Finance Committee, referring to testimony by Roland Shanks of the Department of Fish and Game, say he said they hoped the study would be accomplished in 1 to 2 years. That aside, what is your response to the suggestion of adding, with respect to locale, or other appropriate locations in southeastern Alaska?
I think that's a very reasonable amendment. I have no objection to that amendment at all. Consider it very friendly. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And as Senator Eliason has indicated, it may very well be that we should transplant these animals to an area that does not have wolves. I personally would like to see them located on Zarembo because it's centrally located. Furthermore, it can be more easily policed and controlled. There is an ongoing deer population or hunting of deer on the ABC Islands, even including the Cruzon Island, where they're allowed 4 deer per fall hunt. And as a consequence, to try and say, yes, you can hunt for deer, but please don't shoot one of these elk that's out there, I think we stand a good chance of poacher predation in those areas until the herd got large enough, where with Zarembo Island, you can place it off limits for any kind of hunting And nobody would be offended because there's absolutely nothing to hunt out there right now. Nobody even bothers to go out and look for deer out there. So. And yet it also has a nice wide body of water around it, and a lot of people go by it in aircraft, so it could be easily patrolled. And one of the reasons, and I'd like to emphasize this as a final comment to the committee, that we want to see this done by volunteers and through voluntary contributions of funds necessary, is that I want the people of the area to have a vested interest in that elk herd. So that when some guy shows up sloppy at a bar and starts bragging about how he and his brother-in-law just took an elk out of that herd last weekend, I want four loggers to knock hell out of him on the spot.
Ms. Taylor, could you speak to the 50,000 as to whether that's loggers do things like that? Is that an adequate amount of money? That's a realistic fiscal note or not?
The $50,000 I put in as a guesstimate of what it would cost for them to transport personnel around and for the department to use for the acquisition of drugs and for the necessary studies. When we finally got to finance, our third committee hearing on this bill, that's when the gentleman who's here now showed up and somehow figured out a fiscal note for me. It just happens to fit within the $50,000, provides $18,000 worth of helicopter time on a fogmack. I already had people willing to volunteer all the helicopter time necessary for a fogmack. My concerns are I don't wish to put Senator Zaroff in a difficult position with his constituents because I want them to be just as pleased and as happy about this as we are. I believe there are other areas. Let me give you another quick one. Colorado has a herd of 4,000 elk in one area. They would like to reduce that elk herd to 2,000 because of heavy use of the range and the area that it's in. They're very fearful of some disasters out of that herd. They're seriously talking of slaughtering off 400 to 500 head per year for the next 4 years to reduce the size of that herd. Before people start shooting them, I'd like to be able to suggest to them that we can transfer a few of those elk.
Let's trade them for wolves.
I'd be happy to. Nobody seems to want the wolves.
Senator Lawson, did you have a question?
Well, Representative Robin Taylor's quite correctly insisting on transplanting elk in an area where there are deer. Because, you know, which is what you mentioned, and we have poachers, but I don't think we call them poachers anymore.
I shouldn't bring any levity in, but one of the members... one of the members of the staff sent up a little note and said we could use a ferry and call it the Elk Ark. Sorry.
Seriously, Senator, I've been talking with both of them, people in Washington and in Oregon. Oregon has a herd, Astoria, up in the peninsula area, comes down out of the mountains every year, and they usually take out of that herd a good portion to keep its size down. They have a yard or a big field all set up with elk fence, loading ramps, the whole thing. Literally, we can back in with a semi-truck, run some elk in the back end, and a few days later on our own ferry at very little expense, we can kick them loose in the southeast. That's assuming they can get by a quarantine, if in fact the department wants to quarantine them to make sure they don't have any bugs or bad problems.
Any other questions on this? Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair. I would like to ask Bob Hinman a question, if I may. In the department's bill analysis, the amendment proposed would change the language to read, the Department of Fish and Game shall, over the next 3 years, transplant to Zarembo Island or other appropriate location in southeastern Alaska. Under your proposed language, the responsibility would be placed directly on your shoulders to actually transplant these elk over the next 3 fiscal years. At the same time, as I was exploring before with the author of the bill, the way the bill is phrased now, the burden really isn't on you to carry out the transplant. Do you want the responsibility?
Madam Chair. I don't know that I want it particularly, Senator, but it's my opinion that the actual transplanting of any game animals is a department function. It cannot be, by its very nature and by the authorities in statute, it cannot be volunteer helicopters, people, whatever, available. But I think it's necessary that the department be the lead agency.
Thank you.
Let's take about a 5-minute recess.
Robin?
And then we'll be right back.
Bob?
Call the meeting back to order, Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, I would like to move that, do you want one motion to committee substitute and report out with individual information? I think
we need the amendments.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Am I missing something?
Yeah, I was going to suggest that I make a motion to have a committee substitute drawn as follows again to report it out with individual. Madam Chair, I would like to move that the committee adopt a committee substitute for House Bill number 165 that would change the first sentence to read, the Department of Fish and Game shall over the next 3 years transplant to Zaremba Island or other appropriate location in Southeast Alaska not less than 30 and not more than 150 elk, period. The third second sentence would be the same. Delete the third sentence starting on line 15. And, Madam Chair, further part of the motion is that the bill be reported, the committee substitute be reported out with individual recommendations.
All right. A question for Ann. For clarification, on line 15, would you explain what you're doing there?
I'm removing the sentence, the department's authorized to enter into agreements and so on. The department states they already have this authority and that it's
not necessary in the legislation. Ask unanimous consent.
Ask unanimous consent.
I would ask that you add one other item, excluding a Frognack Island and taking the video, however that can be drafted as a consensus. I'll go someplace else
again. Is that okay?
That's fine with me.
Senator, can you amend your...
Madam Chair, at the end of the first sentence, after the word elk, provided these shall not be taken from a Frognack Island.
And that's included in your motion,
yes.
And you've asked
committee substitute
for the committee substitute
consent.
And to move the bill and ask unanimous consent.
Individual recommendation?
Yes, that was.
Do I hear an objection? If not, so ordered. And what we will do in this case is to prepare the committee substitute, bring that around with the sign up sheet at the same time so you can be sure that we have the wording is correct, and we'll circulate that so it can be read over tomorrow. I'd appreciate now a motion, if you're so prepared, on House Bill 166. That's the appropriation accompanying it. The hearing was on both bills.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we need a committee substitute to add to line 12 the language or other appropriate location in southeastern Alaska, and I so move for a committee substitute, and a further move that the committee substitute be reported out with individual recommendation and ask unanimous consent.
Senator Fisher, we have to get rid of a Frognack Island, I would assume, in this. Is that correct?
Oh my God, yes.
Senator Fisher?
Yes, Madam Chair. For the transplantation of elk to Zaremba Island.
Or
other appropriate location in southeastern Alaska. I didn't see this. Ask unanimous consent.
And was that
individual recommendations?
And move the bill.
Move 166 with individual recommendations.
Do I hear an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And again, we'll take both of those bills, get the committee substitute drawn, and we'll circulate the signature sheet just so that we're sure we have both in order. And Representative Taylor, thank you very much. And would you
I'd like to thank the committee. I think you did an excellent job, and I really appreciate it.
Would you be kind enough?
We'll out of yours now.
Well, I'm going to see the drop.
We'll have staff contact your office so that we're sure what you get. Thank you very much.
I'll talk to you.
Okay.
All right. We will now take up the final piece of legislation for today. This is HB 316, Navigable Waters. We kept the public hearing open because we had several areas of concern were raised. You have in your packet a Senate committee substitute for House Bill number 316, Resources. There are several changes I would point out to you, and then we do have the sponsor of the bill on hand. There's been a good deal of discussion with a number of people. We have a findings and purpose section, section 1, lines 9 and 10. A change in page 1, line 13, we've added the word subject to federal navigational servitude. Changes in lines 23 through 25, changes in line 27, and on page 2, changes through line 4 and 5. We've changed this from a Class A to a Class B misdemeanor, and what I think is appropriate is to ask Representative Cotton to come forward. We have a number of other people that were here before that may wish to give testimony. Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I understand, I apologize for this in the last meeting. I appreciate the committee's work that they put into this. It's always appreciated when a group of smart people like you work on my bill for me.
What's the number?
This is 316.
I didn't go through here last week, so I don't know who did this, but I'm not really sure what a couple of these concerns were. I assume that the timber industry wanted to make sure that they were going to be able to continue to pursue their activities. That's fine with me. That certainly wasn't certainly didn't intend to stop anybody from doing something they're doing already.
Mr. Cotton, very briefly, the major issue had been the difference between freshwater and salt water, and whether we'd be putting another layer of permitting. There were some other issues. That was a basic question of just understanding what the issue and what was being accomplished by the bill.
Well, I was primarily concerned with fresh water, although I understand it would apply to the state and territorial water for a 3-mile limit. So if I'm happy with the bill, that's a good way to hear.
All right, fine.
One question, and it may be covered in another section of the statute here on page 2, line 5, authorized by the commissioner. I assume that is referred to later in the statutes, if they don't appear here to identify which commissioner is supposed to be DNR.
Madam Chairman, this is in Title 38, and all references to the commissioner, I believe, in Title 38 are to the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
Yeah, that's
right.
Right.
So,
no problem. If you'll stay by in case any questions arise.
Question.
All right. Senator.
Now, in reading this, I'm not quite sure what took care of my concerns or not. When I put a step down into the water that doesn't keep somebody's boat from going by it, do I have to get a permit to do it?
No, ma'am.
This doesn't change anything exists on that.
Senator Lyson.
I'm just curious, what problem does this address?
Well, this is the problem, of course, is that the Constitution guarantees you this right at the moment, but the statute doesn't. So, as an example, if you're in a boat on a freshwater river and someone's got an obstruction across the river that's preventing you from going up the river, you have a constitutional right to do it, so you have to take it to court. There's no statute that has any penalty or abatement procedures. So, with the law here, it would be easier for you to protect your rights. It'd be easier to enforce. It would be easier to force this person to stop doing that. There'd be a law against it. Right now, there isn't a law against it. It's constitutional. You have a constitutional protection, but there's no law against this person. Person doing that.
Further questions,
Senators?
Senator page 1.
Between 18 and 19, right in there, because it's not on the line.
No.
But it does say, use of the watering rights to title land below the ordinary high water mark. Is that the present language of Title 38?
I believe it is. That's probably dealing with fresh water. We talk about an ordinary saltwater park as opposed to tidal water that has different descriptions for.
Well, is spring runoff? My problem is spring runoff considered high water, ordinary high water? Because if it is, this is happening to people right to my front porch.
Staff, you look at that issue, Mr. Campbell.
Madam Chairman, spring runoff or other times of unusual flood are not considered ordinary high water.
Yes, ma'am. Senator Fred Camp, would you like to come and look at my dock when before the ice goes out and so on? It's covered too. So your porch and my dock are a serious concern here. Any other questions of Representative Cotton?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Jaw.
This is
about
subject to federal navigation
servitude.
Senator?
Yeah. Representative Cotton, on each of these sections, sections 1 and 2, there is a subparagraph D that says this section may not be construed to affect or abridge valid existing rights. What does that mean?
I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I'm afraid it means that if a river has been judged non-navigable and the natives own the land underneath it, it just doesn't take anything away from them. Also, it means if there are any other rights that exist legally right now, this doesn't affect those rights. So I'm not sure what you're getting at. I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
Maybe it is, or I just maybe feel more comfortable with that language in there, I guess. If, you know,
this was an amendment on the House floor from Representative Wallace, and I believe that Senator Ferguson, Representative Wallace, worked that language out. So at least that's the origin of that, for your information.
I guess my question then is on navigable water, and everybody else seems to have the same question. What is navigable water and what isn't?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Our statutes define navigable waters, and our statutes define public waters, and that's what the bill addresses. So,
okay, what is navigable water?
Well, there's a definition of Title 38. I don't remember.
It's a 5 million acre lawsuit, is what it is. No, but seriously.
Madam Chairman, in everyone's packet, there's a copy of the statute, 3805. I believe it's 06512, and subsection 12 that defines navigable water.
Okay, I guess as you read that definition, it says means any water of the state forming a river, stream, lake, pond, slough, creek, bay, sound, estuary, inlet, strait, passage, canal, sea or ocean, or any other body of water. I don't know how they excluded anything, but or waterway within the territorial limits of the state or subject to its jurisdiction that is navigable, in fact, for any use for public purpose, including but not limited to water suitable for commercial navigation, floats of logs. That's a real broad definition. It doesn't make me anything.
It's purposely broad because we're in court.
That bothers me a little bit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the copy of the constitutional site? I think it's Title 8, or Title
14. It's in the packet, too.
So that describes the Alaska's constitutional protection and guarantee to access to navigable waters, and I think it's a reference to as defined by state law in the state constitution. So,
it's right. It's a last handout here, Frank. Thank you, Mr. Cotton. You'll be on hand. I'm sure we have others to testify. Thank you. Mr. Somerville?
All right.
Who else had an interest in the bill? Mr. Clark?
Madam Chairman, my name is Jim Clark. I'm the attorney for the We support the bill as written. I'd like to congratulate your staff and the bill author staff for the fine cooperation assistance we got. Very speedily resolved our problems. I think it's a good piece of legislation.
Basically, it doesn't add an extra layer of permitting the way it's worked.
No, Madam Chairman, I think all the problems have been worked out. Again, it was done very expeditiously, and everybody was very cooperative. Good deal.
All right, fine. Do we have anyone else? Yes. John, would you identify yourself, and we'll be interested in your comments.
Good
Madam Chair, my name is John Telling. Yes, I'm attorney for Seal Asset Corporation, another business entity that expressed some concerns with the prior version of the bill. I just want to echo Jim's sentiments that we met over the weekend both with your staff and with staff of the sponsor, and they did, I think, an excellent job redrafting a bill to meet its purpose, which is to take care of unauthorized obstructions in navigable waters, while at the same time removing any possibility of duplicative regulation or of interference with private property rights. I think they are indeed to be congratulated, and we support the bill the way it's written.
Fine, thank you.
Thank you.
I see we have the department here. Are your concerns satisfied, Tom? Mm-hmm. And mining and so on. Apparently there's been, Mr. Somerville, I believe, has been satisfied.
That's correct, Madam Chairman.
Right. Are there other questions, Senator Jean?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The testimony by Bob Loescher from Sea Alaska still indicated a certain dissatisfaction.
Well, just Representative John Tillinghast was there to say that Sea Alaska's concerns have been met. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was Senator Zoff. That was prior to some fairly intensive work that we did over the weekend that resulted in the changes that you've seen before us. Bob's concerns have been taken care of.
What are the changes? Maybe I don't have
them. Do you have a copy of the... Ms. Tillinghast, could you come forward and explain in the committee substitute? Didn't he have a copy of
this? Is it here?
Close the public hearing. Is the committee prepared to take action?
I'll move the bill to the committee substitute for us for a couple of consent. I'll ask unanimous consent.
Hear an objection?
Madam Chairman, I move the bill out with individual recommendation. Ask unanimous consent.
Hear any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Meeting's adjourned, and we have another meeting tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day.
Oh, I forgot. General, I take, Madam Chairman, I second that motion.
Sam, you want to make a recreational voice on this?
Now, let's get the signature on this one so people can blast off.
Relief.
We'll get your other two around for your time.
The Golden Dog concert, haven't you heard? Isn't that very popular?
A brand new